All right, we are back here with the Pocket Protectors podcast, here with my man, the good doctor, and my friend, Luke, the traveling man, always on a plane, always going somewhere, it seems. And this
I've been
is
on a ton of planes.
First time we've been together here since, you know, the madness of the Minneapolis Miracle. So, you know, Dr. Eager, I know for many, many, many reasons, this game had you sweating kind of on both sides of the ledger there. So, you know, take me through it, man. What were your emotions? How'd this game play out for you based on the fact that, you know, you are a fan, but you also do some data science that that maybe had, you know, some other things going into it in this game?
Yeah, this is the hardest thing about our, you know, our jobs, I guess, is that, like, we were on the New Orleans +5 as our lock of the week for PFF. And so, you know, for credibility's sake and, you know, for my colleague's wallet, it's important, you know, to some degree that New Orleans show up. And so, like, as the game, you know, got out to 17, I'm thinking, like, oh, we'll be wrong on this pick, but that's okay. The Vikings are going to win, and that's great. And then, you know, obviously a couple touchdowns later, a really bad Case Keenum pick, and all of a sudden, you know, they're up by 3, and they get that 4-bath field goal. They kind of come back, go 20-14, and I turn to my wife. We're at a family's house in San Diego, and I turn to my wife. I'm like, this game ends 21-20. Like, I just know, you know, too much about the Vikings to, like, see anything other than this happening. And then it kind of goes back and forth, Saints covering, Vikings leading, Saints covering, like, Saints winning. And then the touchdown happened, and we have to sort of retire the Kai Forbath, you know, memorial extra point sort of dig, because he mailed it in and didn't come back out for the extra point. We ended up pushing that game. So it's like a really weird emotional thing in terms of, like, picking that game. And then, like, what's the worst part about, you know, that process is, like, I wasn't nearly as, like, giddy about the Vikings win as I really should have been given the moment. I think a day later when I started listening to, like, Paul Allen and Joe Buck's, you know, call of that play, I started getting goosebumps. And sort of, I, you know, that was one thing I really regretted about the game, was that I was sort of more professionally invested in it than emotionally.
And Luke, how about you? Because I feel like I may have seen some pictures of you. Were you inside the stadium for this madness?
I was indeed in the stands for this.
Oh, wow. So tell us about it. Like, what was the atmosphere like? Like, how loud was it in there? When did your voice come back? Like, yo, paint the picture for us, man.
My voice has been gone, I kid you not, till about this afternoon.
Wow.
And it's this Thursday. Like, I've my throat's still a little bit tickly, but yeah, it was crazy raucous for the whole first half, you know, especially, like, the first drive the Saints came in. Everybody was, you know, had gotten there early, got a couple beers, watched the end of the Jags-Steelers game, and then it was just people were going completely insane. And then as the Saints were, like, coming back, this just cloud of dread, like, fell over the whole stadium. And people still got loud on, you know, on defense and stuff, and they still, like, did what they could, but it was definitely, I don't know, it felt more, like, forced. Like, it felt less like genuine excitement and more like, please God, don't do this to us again. And I remember, you know, over the whole course of the season, we had all these moments that are like, oh, this team isn't like the teams of old, you know, the old Vikings would have blown that and these Vikings still won the game. And I remember thinking, like, and I was saying it out loud all the time, like, come on, be the team we think you are, be a different team. And, like, when Kai Forbath made the field goal, my thought wasn't like, oh, all right, with a minute and a half left, he made the field goal. It was more like, all right, cool, we didn't lose the game on the spot there. But, like, I still had absolutely no faith in the defense, like, stopping them from going down and getting their own field goal, and then certain enough they did. And, like, my dad and I were at the game together, and we were just, like, totally hopeless. Like, we were thinking about getting out of the stadium. We were like, we got to stick it out to the end. But I genuinely considered, like, leaving the stadium to try to get to my flight on time, because I had a flight that was leaving that night. And I was like, ah, oh, man, like, are we really going to, I don't think we're, like, should we try to leave? No. Okay, we won't. And then my dad's coworker was also there, and he had his phone out the whole time taking pictures and video and stuff, and just, like, getting a bunch of stuff on the whole experience. So he had his phone out for the final play, and he turned it to us like as Stephon Diggs was running down the sideline, and got a picture of us in like the exact moment that we realized that we were about to win the game. And it's just this like pure joy and elation. And it's my avatar on Twitter now. And it was just, it was a beautiful, like unforgettable moment. And the skull chant with Keenum at the end that he was leading, it was just like the moment he just took Minnesota as his own. It was just beautiful.
So I guess, cause you were in the stands, you were amongst, you know, the hardcore Vikings faithful. Was there any kind of chatter, any talk about, you know, the performance of Keenum, the team overall? Like, were people actually starting to, because I know when I was watching at home, I was watching all by myself. My family left me alone. I picked up food. They ate upstairs. My sister came over to, you know, keep the kids occupied. And I watched in the basement by myself. And really up until that point, there, you know, there was the terrible interception, as Eric said, that that kind of, I guess we'll say, sparked some of the comeback. And it was just like, oh my goodness, like it all kind of fell apart on us here. And then, you know, the defense couldn't hold up. And then, you know, that play happened and basically all of that just went away and stopped mattering anymore. I guess, were people having those kind of conversations in the stands? Like, or was it just kind of that general, as you mentioned, sense of dread where it was just like, oh boy, here we go. Same old Vikings. They're going to break my heart all over again.
All I really know is the conversation I was having with my dad, you know, and we were talking about my dad is not a fan of Case Keenum. So he was, every time Case Keenum would like make a bad play or miss a throw, he'd be like, keep looking at me and be like, he's a bad quarterback. I think it was more of just like a vibe though. I wasn't,
is your dad Yanka? is your dad a Reef?
Wouldn't that be a joke? No, but yeah, there was definitely like an emotional vibe. Like you'd look around and just the looks on people's faces and you can see like the tension in how they were standing and just like, they're really going to do this to us again. Like they're really going to end these magical seasons in these totally anticlimactic ways again.
And what's weird, like looking at, so, cause you know, I was looking for the article. I know I was bothering Eric about it after the game. I'm surprised because, Case Keenum, pretty much he graded like, I guess, right about average for PFF. Looks like a 70, 75 for his overall grade on this game. So I guess that last play, we brought him back up because it felt like a really uneven game for him. And I guess one of the questions I had from you, Eric, before we can kind of, you know, slide back into it, as we get towards the end there and some of those miraculous throws were being made where, you know, Case Keenum, you know, the big balls that Mike Zimmer alluded to earlier on in the season, They definitely showed through with some of the throws he was making there down the stretch, you know, to Adam Thielen, and then obviously the game winner to Stephon Diggs. Like on a play where Adam Thielen goes up with like a defender draped on his back like that, how is that type of throw graded? Is that like considered like a big time throw, or is that more the receivers going up and getting the majority of the credit on something like that?
Yeah, let me actually look, because I think I did have this for the Purple podcast that I was on earlier this week. Oh, good for you, right? But the Keenum, I do know. So the funny thing is when you go and look through grades, what's really interesting is you remember plays you forgot were either good or bad. So as I was looking, one of the worst grades, obviously we gave like a -2 to Keenum on his interception play, but -1 on the play preceding the Kai Forbath bomb, the one where flushed out of the pocket and he threw the ball to Kyle Rudolph and Von Bell was like face guarding the guy and Marcus Williams was coming over and almost picked the ball off right before the field goal. We gave him a poor grade there as sort of a turnover worthy play. But if you're looking at the play beforehand, I believe the completion to Thielen, we did give him a big time throw for that, only because it being third and long, and you know the depth of the pass, fact that you know the receiver went up and got it, that was indeed a big time throw. He also did get a big time throw for the last touchdown, because although I think we all would agree that Diggs did a lot of that work. That was a perfect throw by Keenum, so we did give him a decent amount of the credit there. I'm trying to look at what the receiver, assuming Diggs is either a 1.5 or a 2, and Thielen was a 1.5 or a 2 on those catches respectively. But yeah, he kind of graded, a lot of plus fives in there, a lot of not as many minus fives in there. So he had some good throws. The Jarius Wright throw was quite good at the beginning of the game. In the sort of seconds. So what was the play where he had a 9.8 time to throw seconds? We gave him a plus 0.5 on that. So, he had all told, a decent game. I think if you're going to look places for where he went wrong, it's obviously the interception and some of the other turnover worthy play. If you're going to look at offense went wrong, and we've talked about this privately, it's mostly them just sort of dumping expected points by continuously running to Expensiata, the tape train, over and over in the second half was kind of the reason I think that they took a step backward in the second half.
Yeah, so to that point, I guess, and Luke, you can jump back in here as well, I guess. So why do we suppose, I guess, the Vikings coaches, because it seemed the thing that really, more than anything, really was giving away the points, like you said, was the commitment to trying to bleed the clock, maybe a bit too early, given the fact that Drew Brees was on the opposite sideline there. I guess, what's your thought on why coaches still do things that are not optimal when it comes to winning, like running the ball to bleed it out? Because I think about the flip side of that, which was the Patriots versus the Titans, where the Titans can stop the run, and the Patriots had positive game script in that entire game and just kept passing the ball because they knew the Titans weren't going to be able to stop it. Like, why don't more coaches do that?
I wonder if you talked to Pat Shurmur in that moment, if he trusted Case, because that was like while Case was throwing that horrible interception, like right after that, and then like some other fairly negatively, I would imagine some other negative graded plays in the second half there too, that like led to misses and stuff. And then you think, well, we can't pass and we can't run, but we might as well do the thing that bleeds the clock, I guess could happen. I also think that like coaches just run to bleed the clock because that's been the wisdom for forever. And they don't like, there's definitely in not just in the Vikings, everywhere, there's this idea of, you run the ball to, grind out the end of a game when you have a lead. You run with a lead. You just run with a lead, and they don't really question it or think, is this actually the right move? It's just what you do. And I think that's one of the many things that separates Bill Belichick from the rest of the coaches, is that he's constantly questioning and sometimes not going along with like traditional wisdom, as it were. And that's why you get these wins where they, win by 55 and Tom Brady threw 66 passes when he totally didn't need to and was still passing the ball when you're up 40. Like, that is why Bill Belichick does that, because I think he definitely has more respect for like expected points and that model of like evaluating play selection.
I also think it's due to the fact that, and there has been academic research on this, that people are simply just risk averse. And so people have been shown statistically through many different tests to, basically, go for suboptimal things in order to mitigate risk. And so if you're the Vikings, like we've seen how Mike Zimmer has talked about Case Keenum all season, right? And during the beginning of the game, it's sort of one of those things where we have to be, we have to throw the ball downfield. We have to try to make plays in the passing game because we need to get a lead. And then by the time you get to the second half, I think they may very much know that they're a negative expected value, but at least like they sort of like have bounds on what can really happen. And that's why I think like plays like Keenum made against the Saints, the interception, is really going to kill his sort of standing with Zimmer. It's because it's one of those, it's like, we know that we're dumping expected points. We are expecting our defense to make up for that. And what we don't want is we don't want anything unexpected from you. And so Patriots, they know their bar is just so much higher. Like the floor performance from Tom Brady is still like more than enough for them to win, generally speaking. So they're more willing to sort of be risky because they know that the mean is higher. I think that's kind of where that comes from. It doesn't make sense to us, I think. And I still don't think it's optimal, but it's sort of like what these people are thinking, in my opinion.
That makes a little bit of sense to me here. And so I guess as we carry this forward, because obviously one of the things we talked about going into the, you know, the Saints matchup was, you know, their defense was a much improved unit. And so that it might be a tougher matchup from for the Vikings offense than maybe some were thinking. As we carry this forward, I mean, you look at the Eagles defense, that seems pretty scary. And especially given, you know, some of the lack of continuity along the Vikings offensive line, looks like it, you know, they have some players that really could cause or do damage for us, or put Case Keenum back in the situation where I think, Eric, you tweeted he had a passer rating of, you know, 5.1 or something like that when he was under pressure. I guess what are your expectations for this matchup, and I guess how the Vikings try to deal with, you know, the fact that Case, you know, really didn't do well under pressure going against a team that, you know, looks to have the pieces that could have him under pressure quite a bit over the course of the game.
Yeah, I think when you're looking at trying to handicap this game, that matters, but it also matters that that's sort of an unstable stat. So, you know, we're probably more likely to see Keenum have a 75 passer rating under pressure than the 5 he had against the Saints. At looking at kind of the looking at sort of the, you know, ways to, you know, matchups here, I think if you look, go position by position, it becomes a little bit better if you're a Vikings fan, because, you know, defensively, I think the Vikings are every bit as good, if not better, than the Eagles. I think all the statistics would sort of show you that. They have less, I think, holes in terms of in their secondary, you know, even like at the linebacker core, they're a little healthier than the Eagles, so on and so forth. I think that they have a decided edge with Kate, as much as we've talked badly about Keenum here, like they have a decided edge at quarterback between Case Keenum and Nick Foles. If we're going to project that Case Keenum's going to struggle under pressure, I think Nick Foles is going to struggle under pressure in spades. Now, Philadelphia's got a better offensive line, but I think, you know, I think that the Vikings defense is more than up to the task there. So when we were looking at sort of, you know, who is going to win this game, that basically peaked up for me. It was like, well, the Vikings have a better quarterback and a better defense. And so we sort of leaned towards Minnesota there. And, you know, hopefully that ends up working out.
And Luke, I guess, what's your perspective? I know that you spent a lot of time here kind of, you know, you look back and you wrote some awesome things there for Purple PTSD about, you know, last week's game and the play that brought us the miracle. But I guess as you look forward here, I guess, what are your thoughts on how things shake out in terms of, you know, the Vikings, the Eagles, and this matchup that we're about to witness on Sunday?
Yeah, so with the point about pressure, in addition to just echoing the fact that, like, that 5.1 is a huge outlier for Keenum. He's been, he hasn't been, like, perfect under pressure, but he's been okay. He's been one of the better pressure quarterbacks in the league this year. I think Eagles, the difference, there's two ways that you can produce against the Eagles when they're getting pressure, and they're going to get pressure. We have an offensive line that's shifting around. Rashad Hill probably won't suddenly become, you know, I mean, Brandon Graham will get his against Rashad Hill. You know, Mike Remmers gave up 4 pressures against the Saints interior. Fletcher Cox will have a nice time there. But I think if I'm Pat Shurmur, I'm either telling Case Keenum, scramble, run around, make things happen, and I'm going to try to get him with double moves. The Philadelphia Eagles have a super aggressive secondary, and they really go for it a lot. And if you give them routes that they think they can jump, they will go for it every time. So you can get them on, like, sluggos. But if I don't feel comfortable with that, if I don't want Case Keenum running around on the grass, or, you know, we don't want him to play that game, they also have given up a lot of production in the last half of the season to rub routes. And I'll cite Brett Coleman made a great video about what happened to the Falcons in this game and how Steve Sarkisian, like, refused to take advantage of those tendencies in that game. So, like, bunch rub routes, which we used a bunch against the Saints. There were a couple of pretty big completions to Diggs on, like, crossers that started with, like, rub concepts. So I guess that would be how I answer the pressure question if I'm Shermer. And I think both of those have their pros and cons, both of those game plans. And then in terms of the quarterback advantage, I'm going to pull out a couple things from the Pro Football Focus QB annual. I'm going to plug it because it's awesome. Boom. When Nick Foles has more than so when he targets 20 or more yards down the field, his passer rating is a 10.4. Part of that is really bad interception luck. Every turnover worthy play he's thrown at that distance has been caught. Oh, well, only the one. So he only has 12 attempts there. So it's kind of a bad sample size, but
he's completed three passes over 20 yards in the air. One of them was to another team. That's the stat, I think.
Yeah.
Is that bad?
It's not bad.
Okay. He's also significantly worse when he has more time to throw, which sounds really backwards, but when he has, I think it's 4 seconds, more than 4 seconds to throw, his passer rating on the whole season falls to a 5, which means that those are plays that are either long developing, like huge deep routes, or those are plays where he's like being forced to scramble and improvise and he just cannot function. He has a 39.6 passer rating on curl routes, which is the exact same as if you just threw it into the dirt every time. And there's a lot of these huge holes in the Eagles game that are going to be really hard to overcome. So essentially on defense to destroy the passing game, I just have to stop the quick underneath stuff. I just have to make sure that the cornerbacks are being disciplined and, you know, they're not playing in these huge off coverage, giving these huge off coverage cushions like they were in the tail end of the Saints game. Like, I don't want to see Trey Waynes line up 15 yards off the ball and then get beat by a slant, because that's all the Eagles have and that's all he has to defend. I want to see him get up and do press and make Nick Foles try and improvise. And once you've done that, Nick Foles will fail for you.
I think I like that plan. I think that's a good plan. Is Eric, anything else that really jumps out based on kind of what you just heard from Luke?
Yeah, I think even the stats when Foles, you know, is later on in the pocket are even worse when you consider that, you know, passer rating doesn't take into consideration sacks, and, you know, he's very much a statue back there. And so those are in the event that he's lucky enough to get the ball off. But in many cases, he's also going to be taken down for a sack. And we saw that against Atlanta, where he, you know, got them out of field goal range, one possession with taking a sack. One of the interesting things to note too, and this is why I think PFF grades are an important part of the conversation, is that, you know, Foles, the two most efficient, effective passing plays for the Eagles on Saturday, one was a deeply underthrown ball where the receiver came back and forced a penalty. And the other one was right off of Keanu Neal's leg. So, you know, we look at that, he's like, oh, 1 for 1 for 20 yards over the middle of the field. Well, that ball should have been picked off, you know, and, you know, you look at, like, if that field goal doesn't go, you know, if they don't get that field goal at the end of the half, then Atlanta is going for the win with a field goal at the end instead of trying to score a touchdown, you know. So it's really interesting, right? And I think people was, okay, the Eagles are a 3-point dog to a team like Atlanta at home, win that game, but did they really win that game, you know, from the process perspective? Well, now they're a 3-point dog to Minnesota at home in the NFC Championship game. Well, the Vikings, you know, basically beat up for three-ish quarters one of the best teams in the NFL last week. So things up, and if you're a Vikings fan, you're just optimistic enough to be worried.
Yeah, that's about it. At work, everyone's like, you must be super excited. Like, yeah. You feel it, and it's just like, no. No, like I can't be, like, even the last game, my wife was like, that's probably the quietest I've ever heard you during a Vikings game until that very last play. Like, I basically just, like, even in the first half, like, just dead quiet. I mean, I was being a little reckless on Twitter, but, you know, just in terms of me watching the game, was just like,
right.
I'm excited, but I can't really get that excited because, you know, Vikings.
Well, that was like, that was another, you know, when Favre threw the pass to Greg Lewis, 2009, I think my roommate, like, found out, like, how much the Vikings had meant to me back then. I'm imagining what it was like for you, you know, when Stephon Diggs like stayed in bounds and Paul Allen yelled, "Oh my God!" and you know, Joe Buck actually, you know, gave one of the best calls he's ever given, that kind of thing. We're all like, you know, I was more in shock than anything, frankly.
And I think that's about the yeah, it probably didn't completely register with me until the next day. It probably registered for Luke because he couldn't hear until the next day, but
it didn't sink in for like many days. I just like kind of sat there and like I spent all of Monday, and I had Monday off of work, thankfully, just like recovering and like watching it from a thousand angles.
So that brings up an interesting conversation point. So what if the Vikings win the Super Bowl? What kind of win would they have to have in order for it to really sink in for us? Would it have to be a game where it's a blowout and we get, and it's not like the Saints game, it's more of a blowout where we're like coming to grips with it in the third quarter, and then the other team doesn't really have a shot, and we're just like gearing up? Because I feel like if it's one of those games like Sunday, even if it's not like miraculous, but like the Vikings get out to a lead and the other team comes back and scares the crap out of us, you don't come to grips with it. Or if they come back and win, I don't think we're going to come to grips with it until later in the week. Like, when does it hit us? I feel like, you know, I feel like it's, well, we're getting the cart in front of the horse here, but like it's interesting to think about, right?
I feel like every Super Bowl run, if this is going to be a Super Bowl run, needs to have a moment like that. Like, I'm thinking back, like the 2014 Patriots, they had that divisional round game with the Ravens where they came back from 14 twice. Or like the Seahawks, when they won it, they had that crazy NFC Championship game with Richard Sherman, you know, tipping the ball over Michael Crabtree. Like every time a team wins the Super Bowl, like they need, you know, Joe Flacco over Raheem Moore, they like need that moment. So we have that now. We can check that box.
And right.
Now the other two games, we can win in whatever way they happen.
The Colts came back on the Patriots in 2006.
And oh, that was so cool.
That was a good one. I'm trying to think. So the 2008 Steelers, it was the James Harrison interception return in the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah.
Game was bananas. That was a good game. Not everybody's throwing shade at Mike Tomlin, but he has a Super Bowl ring. So
it's a pretty good AFC Championship too, wasn't it?
Yeah, Ravens Steelers wasn't the greatest. I don't remember. It doesn't ring. It doesn't register with me.
I don't remember it very well. Or like Eli Manning beating the Packers. Both those games. Well, the second time he beat the Packers was just a blowout. But the game with Kyle Williams muffing the punt.
Yeah, the Giants going into Lambeau and beating the Packers twice, those were in like my top 10 games of all time for a long time, back when I had the, you know, the Schadenfreude was really deep. It's like, what are your favorite games of all time? Giants Packers, Giants Packers, Seahawks Packers, Broncos Packers, Vikings Packers wild card round of 04. Of course, like my favorite game of all time, obviously being the time where Favre walked into Lambeau and won with like a pulled groin, throwing a touchdown pass to my guy Jeff Dugan to seal it.
Jeff Dugan. Is that who you mirrored your game against when you were still playing tight end?
I was an H and tight end. Yeah, I knew. The problem was, is I wanted to be like Jim Kleinsaucer, but that dude was too damn good at blocking defensive end. So I was going to be realistic. So I was more of a move guy.
Yeah, makes sense. That makes sense. Well, as per usual, you know, we've gone off the rails, but Eric did make a very compelling case for me to maybe not hate Eli Manning as much as I do. Because, you know, he has been a part of bringing the Packers organization quite a bit of pain. So I might have to go
and the Vikings
recalculate things a little bit.
Who threw more touchdown passes to Vikings, Eli Manning or T-Jack? Let's do the math again. Let's recalculate
without looking it up.
Oh yeah, that is a good one right there. Well, I feel like we've run the gamut on the questions that I had for you guys tonight. Is Eric, because you know you've become one of the hardest working men in this here football analysis industry. You're on with us. You got the the regular, you know, articles coming out at Pro Football Focus, which, you know, I've been, you know, following your stuff for a little while now. The articles are getting meatier and meatier as time goes on here. And you also have, you know, your podcast, which I think when I went to check now is actually named your actual podcast name. So I guess, Eric, what do you have going on? What should the listeners be on the lookout for?
Well, in addition to our weekly podcast, I do the Pro Football Forecast, which is, or PFF Forecast, which is, I believe, now on iTunes. But if it's not on iTunes yet, it will be relatively soon. But if you go to pff.com, you know, profootballfocus.com, it's in the podcast section there. So, yep, we just did our second episode, recorded last night. It's basically, you know, we have a few segments that I think are pretty funny, and then we talk a little bit about each game. We're going to talk more about New England Jacksonville because, as I told the guys off the air, I refuse to pick against the Vikings for another week because if they're going to make the Super Bowl, I want to be emotionally there. Yeah, we do talk about it a little bit, and kind of the same thing we talked about tonight, which is that, you know, we think the Vikings have a better quarterback and a better defense. So we're going to, you know, we think that they're the favorites to come out of the NFC.
Boom. Luke, what you got going on? What should people be on the lookout for?
Yeah, if you go over to Purple PTSD, you can find my piece on Buffalo Right 7 Heaven, where I did a breakdown of the actual play design and the defensive look the Saints used. The actual nature of the mistakes Marcus Williams made, and it was beyond just like missing the tackle, like the decision that he made and the decision that he should have made and all that, using a really cool feature that Next Gen Stats has been rolling out on Twitter sometimes for key plays, where they've got like their trackers and they've basically got like little checkers moving across a gridiron to really like see it from a bird's eye view, which is really cool. And you can go to, you can also find the Purple Journal. You can find me very hoarsely describing my time at the game and hear some really fun anecdotes from Joe Oberle, who's in the press box. And, you know, we talk a little bit more about the Saints game there. As for by the next time you hear me on this podcast, we will have either won or lost against the Eagles. And I'll probably write something recapping that game, probably something from an EPA standpoint, because I've been having a lot of fun lately with looking at like a play-by-play EPA stuff and like which were the most impactful plays and like the miracle touchdown we had, I think 0.3 of an expected point at that time, because that's what you get when you're 3rd and 10 on your own 39 with 10 seconds left. So that one play was like a full touchdown almost of expected points, where like most touchdowns are like the last, you know, half a point or whatever. So that's pretty cool. So I'll probably write something based on that, or unless something else happens in the game that like truly inspires me.
Are we going to get the, I'll pay Matt, Dan, you know, what's it, Matt Harmon? I'll pay him some money. If we can get a next gen, like drawing of all of Laquan Treadwell's routes this year, I want it. I want to see the step data. I want to see it. Actually, honestly, good for the Vikings to finally turn the page to Jarius Wright against the Saints, and hopefully they continue to do so on Sunday against the Eagles.
Got like 30 points of PFF grade advantage.
And just like yards per route run, you know, percentage of targets caught, all of that kind of stuff. It really, you know, and honestly, good for them for trying out, you know, Laquan Treadwell. Honestly, you know, I think sometimes we do give up on young players too much, but
yeah, I want to see that separation data too, because the whole narrative is like he's getting open and he's just not in the progression.
It's not what I heard.
So when are we starting our GoFundMe for some Super Bowl tickets? Yeah.
Oh,
here, look here, looking at these prices. No, I mean, you know,
You make a good point, Jason. So if anybody who's listening to this podcast, I'm talking to you, Yinka, and you live in the Twin Cities. Well, Yinka's the only – oh, no, Miles lives in the Twin Cities too. On Friday, February 2nd, so the Friday before the Super Bowl, there is a free sports analytics conference in the Twin Cities called SportCon, and myself and PFF underscore George will be speaking there talking about quarterback analysis. So if anybody wants to go, to as well, that'd be awesome. I'd buy y'all a drink.
And Super Bowl tickets or just a drink?
I mean, no, because I I just got tenure, but I don't make that much money compared to what I would need to buy Super Bowl tickets like it was nothing.
Those prices are wild, man. I think the cheapest tickets that I saw were $4,500.
That's yeah. And I just went on a vacation to San Diego with four, you know, my family of four. So yeah, but if you guys want to, you know, to nerd out over football on Super Bowl weekend, that'd be a lot of fun.
We have to get someone to set up a camera so we can live stream you or something.
That's not creepy at all. I'd be happy to do it.
Cool. Well, gentlemen, as always, thank you for coming on and talking football with me. It's crazy to think this weekend. The Vikings are one game away from potentially playing in the Super Bowl, and I am terrified about it. So,
we're there for you, man.
Thank you, guys.
We're in it together.
We are all together, being terrified together. And listeners, as always, thank you for listening to this episode of the Pocket Protectors Podcast. Eric, Luke, y'all have a good night.